Hello everyone and welcome to Digital Roadmap, an old school gaming podcast where we explore how the games of the past brought us the games we love today. I'm your host Grant and today we're discussing Creatures. Originally released in 1996 by Millennium Interactive, which later became CyberLife Technologies, this game represents kind of the logical endpoint, the logical growth point of the virtual pet craze of the 90s, best represented through Tamagotchi. So let's not waste any time and get right into this game. Now first off, we're going to look at the controls for this game. It's a keyboard and mouse game. It is a quintessential PC game in that sense. The keyboard is actually used to type commands that you communicate with the little creatures, the Norns, that are around you. If you're focused on one particular creature at a time, extra weight's given to the creature that you're focused on, so the commands you type will be more focused towards them. And one of the nice things is there's a very quick keyboard command, so you can repeat the last thing you said instead of having to type it out again and again, which is really useful when you're training them, and that is using Control and S. The mouse in this game is used, basically, you have the left mouse button to activate parts of the world or to interact with the creatures directly. You can basically tickle their heads or slap their bottoms as a way of reward punishment. The right mouse button interacts with the world in that anything that can be picked up is picked up using that button so that you can pick up food, you can pick up toys, and move them around the world as well. An interesting thing is that there's actually a limited ability to move around the world where you're not focused on a given creature, but it can only go so far. You can't go from one end to the other, and that forces you to use your creatures to explore the game itself. Now, as for the gameplay in this game, it's actually very much a gameplay cycle where you go through a process and then you end up right back where you started, essentially. So in this game, you start by hatching your very first creature. It's called a Norn. It's this cute, adorable little fuzzy thing with big eyes to make you care about them right away. Now you can either wait after you pull them out of the hatchery or you can throw them into the incubator. An important factor, and this can be used later to kind of exploit and control the hatching process yourself, is that if you move an egg after it's been introduced in the world, after it's been laid or it's been popped out, it will not hatch. So if you move it, you have to use the incubator to hatch the egg. Now once it's hatched, once your little baby Norn pops out, that's where you try and guide it up to the language computer. You try and teach it words, so you get the basic verbs. You have left, right, push, sleep, stop, words like that, very basic verb actions that'll teach them core concepts. From there, you have to get them to use the look verb to focus on different items throughout the world, and then teach them those words through the hand icon, through typing them in and repeating them. With this, you do have to repeat. When you're teaching them language, you do have to repeat again and again, because repetition imprints it on the brain and they're less likely to forget that word. It's less likely to be overwritten while they're raising babies of their own later on, where the baby speak has the potential to overwrite their language. After you teach them the basic words, then you have to start teaching them how to survive. So, as I mentioned in the basic control section, you can reward them with a little tickle on the head. You can punish them with a small spanking. And these basically are, you know, tickle good, spanking bad. So if I want them to eat food, I would introduce them food, teach them the word food, tell them push food or pull food, which would basically have them eat it. And then I would reward them with a tickle on the head, teach them that, hey, eating food is good, especially when you're hungry. Now, there's some other things out there, like if you want to teach them that weeds are bad, you know, there's certain flowers you don't want to grab, you call them weeds. When they try and even touch it, if they even try and pick it up, you smack them, tell them no. Another thing is, you know, you have toys in there that helps give them some joy, that helps give them some activity. And again, those are good, those are fun, you teach them how to use that. You can interact with them yourself by left-clicking on the toys and that'll have them react. And there's also the Grendels, which are green, scaly monsters. You want to teach them that those are bad very quickly because they can't kiss, they can't hug, they can't do anything positive. Everything they try and do positive gets immediately turned into something negative. And they are the bad guys, essentially, in this game. So interacting with them would be a quick death for your creatures unless you modify the game files. Now, as your Norns age, they do grow up. So you have your infant, your child, your adult, your old age, and your death, essentially. Now, once they're in the adult state, they can actually breed with other Norns that are in the adult stage and are physically breedable. They don't have any actual naughty actions, so to speak. It's called kiss popping because all you hear is a kiss and a loud pop. Now, it takes multiple times for that to necessarily work, and when it does, the female Norn becomes pregnant, and as they finish their pregnancy, a new egg does pop out. Interesting part about that is that the pregnancy state is actually tied to a very specific chemical process, so if the levels stay too high or the levels don't reach a certain threshold point, they can stay pregnant forever. They can stay pregnant for a long, long time. They can stay pregnant for a very short time. That's actually one of the mutations that can come out in this game. We'll talk about mutations a little bit later during the mechanics, because that is a very deep, deep topic. Now, once the child's born or hatched from the egg, either through the incubator or through the other one, this whole cycle starts over again. And you can have a whole bunch of these running at a single time. You don't have to have just two Norns and an egg. You can have seven Norns all breeding, all hatching eggs at different times, and just having an entire society going on in this game. Now, because this is all very cyclical, because this keeps happening over and over again, the community has come up with their own end game concepts, their own ways to keep it interesting at the end, whether that be through experimenting on the creatures, doing IQ tests, trying to guide the breeding, selective breeding, kind of animal husbandry almost. Or the other two big concepts that are used are called feral runs and wolfling runs. So with a feral run, what you do is you'll train a batch of creatures to survive. You'll teach them to be smart about it. And then you'll load up the world with whatever objects you think would help them, whatever items you want to have in. You can remove certain items if you want. And then basically walk away for a while. Let the game run. Let it do what it wants. See what happens. See what kind of weird, interesting mutations, weird, interesting behaviors come out of this whole sequence that you had nothing to do with outside the basic setup. With a wolfling run, it's basically a feral run without any of the controls. So whereas a feral run, you'll train them ahead of time, you'll load the world up properly, you'll kind of modify things to give them optimal conditions. In this one, it's basically hatch a bunch of them. Okay, have fun, good luck, and just walk away. So, you know, there's no training, there's no loading the world. It's just, here's the environment, here's the world you have to live in. It's almost like an Adam and Eve type concept. Now, some of the most interesting parts of this game are what's happening behind the scenes or what's happening in the mechanical side of the game itself. This game features a few very neat things. So you have a simulated biochemistry. So the chemicals in the creatures actually control their needs, their wants. They determine how much they're willing to listen to you versus do their own thing at any given time. If you're trying to tell them to go run left when they're busy trying to sleep because they're exhausted, they're not going to listen. They're just going to basically say no and go to sleep, because the chemicals are telling them that's what they need. It also features conversions in the creatures themselves as they eat. So once they eat, glucose gets converted into glycogen. You have conversions like that happening all throughout the game, and there's very different ways to go digging in at that and learning more about it. And the chemicals affect the whole system. So you have plants that will grow, pop out, die, and then basically decompose at times. And eating the decomposing plants is essentially eating a weed, and that's not good. So that way, instead of having just one fixed set of food for the entire game, you have carrots that will regrow, you have flowers that will regrow, honey pots that you can refill at the beehive, because there are those underlying rules of the whole game that it will do. Looking at the creatures themselves, the Norns themselves, and even the Grendels eventually, this has a simulated genetic system. This has what CyberLife called digital DNA. And that determines everything. That determines the color of the creatures. That determines their poses that they have available, the gates that they have to walk with. It sets up their brain organization, the receptors in there, how all of that interacts. How they process chemicals gets included in there. And every time they breed, you get DNA from the mother, DNA from the father. It pulls a roughly even amount, but there's always the chance for mutation with each generation. So every time you breed, you may get a mutation, whether it be what most would consider a good mutation or what many would consider to be a bad mutation. It's up for debate, really. Now, some of these mutations, they can be very small changes, like a different color pattern than you were expecting. Maybe one eye is a weird color compared to the other. It can also have, you know, their movement gait may be a little bit different. They may be quicker at processing certain chemicals, and that's going to affect their aging process. That's going to affect how quickly they get hungry, how their energy use is. There's also major changes, though, and this is where the community really got diving into learning about the mutations, because you can get things like a crippling chemical block, so they may not be able to process a necessary chemical to live, and it's going to die at a very young age. You may have a drastic lack of gait options, so all they can do is kind of shuffle along the ground. They can't run, they can't stand up straight, they can just kind of hump their way along the ground, essentially. One of the more popular genetic variations in this game that have come out of it over the years was called the Highlander gene, and that basically meant the way they processed chemicals, they didn't age beyond a certain point. They basically hit the adult age and just stayed there. They never hit old age. They never hit post-breeding period, essentially. And this was actually named after the Highlander film franchise TV series, both were popular at the time, where essentially they couldn't die no matter what you did to them. And that's essentially what's going on with those guys, is they created almost an invulnerability, an immunity in them. And it became a very fascinating thing, and it got sort of patched out. It was still possible to happen, but it was nowhere near as common later on after they released a few different variations in the game itself. Now, this game was very much a game of Windows at the time, where they had different applets, different little mini programs within the program that popped up in little pop-up windows when you activated them. And these were all of your tools to figure out what's going on in the world around you at the time. So first off, you had the hatchery, which is where all the new eggs came from. So when you first start a game, you have no creatures to breed. So you go to the hatchery, you grab an egg or two, pull them out of there, and then they'll end up hatching for you. From there, you have the health kit, which kind of gives you a broad stroke look at the information. So you'll be able to see the drives. You'll be able to see roughly how the brain interacts. You'll get a general sense of their health. And in terms to help heal the creatures, it will give you a limited amount of herbs that will help them heal naturally. So the herbs have certain chemical reactions. They eat them. They get some beneficial chemicals. They still have to process it as food. It's a physical item that you pop into the world that they can then grab and use themselves. The more advanced version of that, of the healing aspect of things, is called the science kit. And that is where you can track very detailed information about their chemicals, watch an ongoing graph of them going up and down. You can pick the chemicals you're going to monitor at that point. So if you want to watch a certain aspect of them, you can set a set of chemicals that will tell you exactly how they're feeling in that aspect. And it has basically an IV, an injection system, where you can put chemicals into their system. You can put a mix of chemicals even into their system that will basically be like going to a doctor, basically be like going to a vet, and help them heal what they're doing with. And you can, again, monitor the results in real time throughout the game. On a broader scale, you also have the observation kit, which gives you kind of an overall look at the Norns in your world. You can see how many Norns you have active at the time, how many eggs you have waiting to hatch, and you can actually set warnings. So if somebody's health is getting too low, it will immediately grab your attention and take you to that creature. Take you to that Norn so you can see exactly who's in bad shape and try and help them. This is great for setting up stuff like that where you really want to look after them. You can also use it to just bring you right to a death when it happens, so you can register the death right away. There's also the breeder's kit in this game, which really is what it says. When you're trying to breed these creatures, you can look at all the information. It will show you their fertility based on certain chemical levels. For the female Norns, it will show the gestation that's going on. They'll show you roughly how far along the egg is to being laid. For the males, it'll just have a big X there showing that they cannot carry an egg themselves, because with the exception of one of the later games' subspecies that they created, I don't think the males carry at all. The other thing that the Breeders' Kit offers you is actually aphrodisiac items. So it has tomatoes, which boost the sex drive chemicals in these creatures and makes them want to breed more. Or it has bad tomatoes, which kind of discourage that. So if you have one that you don't want breeding right now for whatever reason, be it weak health at the time, or there's just a feature in that creature you don't want to see propagated, but you don't want to remove the creature from the game, you feed them that, that limits what they can do as well. Now, the flip side of the two, you have birth and death. So with that, you also have an owner's kit, which when creatures are born, when Norns are born, you can register them in there, give them a name, give them a bit of a bio if you want. It'll tell you who their parents are, and you can take a picture of them. You can actually keep coming back to the owner's kit afterwards and take pictures throughout their life cycle if you want to track everybody. But once you register it, their name is set. You can now access them by name in the game menu. The flip side of that, though, is the graveyard kit. So these creatures do die eventually, be it through old age, be it through illness, be it through intervention by Grendel. And you can register their death as well, put a short epitaph there to memorialize them. It'll show the life cycle that they had. And if you have pictures of them, you can throw a picture on there as well to kind of remember them by. The other two interesting ones are more of a meta access to the game. So you have the performance kit. It's the closest thing this game's going to give you to a score. And by that I mean they're going to give you, you know, the number of Norns you've had previously, your current number of Norns, the eggs you have had laid, the number of eggs hatched, all the things like that, you know, giving you a little bit more detail of how well you've played the game as you go along. And then the last one is the injector kit. And this really is the backbone of the modding scene for this game, where you can drop items into the game. You can basically go to a file, take that file, bring it into the game, put it in there. You've now added that into the world. And it really was set there to basically allow users to create new items. It uses a basic scripting system within it. They're called COBS, which is just some acronym that they had, creature object-based scripting, I think is what it was. And that allows you to create your own items, allows you to modify things, allows you to kind of broaden the world that they're in at the time. Now, the graphics in this game, I don't think there's a lot to talk about. It does have a very beautiful art style to it. But the graphics themselves, they're 2D graphics. You have sprite-based for the characters. Anything that kind of interacts and moves around are sprite-based, so they're kind of rendered graphics that have the ability to move and adjust accordingly. The background itself is kind of a fixed background with a few sprites on it for anything that moves, so the lifts that go up and down, they're sprites on a fixed background. The nice thing about the sprite mechanic that they have is that it's very modular, so the arms, the hands, the head, the torso, the legs, and the feet are all different, so that when you breed them, all of those have the option of being taken from the mother, from the father, or mutating on their own. A fun little tidbit, though, for the graphics is that the background itself was actually done as a physical model first, and then they use that to kind of take a picture, hand draw over it, and kind of create the world from that. Now, the story in this game is very limited. It's not actually in the game itself outside of maybe a quick introduction cinematic. The rough rundown is that these giant aliens called the Shee, or S-H-E-E, created the Norns. One guy created the Grendel because he was a bit of a weirdo. And they were created on this flat, two-dimensional disc world. So that justifies that it's a flat 2D game, essentially. And what happened is eventually these aliens got bored and they left the world to do more experiments, more science somewhere else, kind of leaving their creation to fend for themselves. And that's it. Now you're on the world. Now you're kind of guiding them because reasons. Don't ask questions, just do. Now, in terms of soundtrack in this game, there's not a lot going on with it. You have some music playing in the intro cinematic, but otherwise, it's just ambient sound. Depending where you are in the world, you're going to get different sound effects. You know, if you're in kind of a hostile environment, it'll sound a bit harsher, it'll sound a bit denser, more jungle-like. Whereas when you're at the hatchery, the incubator, the learning room, it's more ambient. You get happy birds chirping all around. But that's about it. Yeah, they were kind of limited in terms of what they could do for sound, so they just did sound, not music. Because this game came on one CD back in the day, so they couldn't really load it with too much information, since most of the space was spent building the simulation engine that was running it all the time. There is a very, very minimal amount of voice acting in this game as well. It's the Norns themselves speak what's called Bibble. The community essentially dubbed it Bibble in the game itself. And it's just gibberish words. For the most part, they relate to actual words as well. So you can, if you really took the time, you could actually know what they were saying without teaching them language, just by learning the sound of what they're saying. The Grendels had their own version, which was obviously deeper and different sounding, but it's the same basic concept. It's not real language. It's just kind of nonsense words that were used. One thing I tried finding out is who actually did the voices of the creatures in the game, and I couldn't find that anywhere. Closest I could find in the credits is that the audio for the game, the audio design for the game, was done by Paul Bob Arnold. And that Bob is in quotation marks there. It's kind of a nickname for him. So I would either put them as being variations of his voice, or just he grabbed somebody else that he knew, almost a friend, had somebody do him a favor and just recorded their stuff for it. Now, this game came out with some expansion packs throughout the course of its life cycle that are worth it. They have some definitely interesting aspects to it. First off, you had the life kits that were released. There were a couple of them released, and basically what they did is they added a few objects. They may have tweaked a few objects in the game, so like carriage would have a different chemical composition. They would give a few more benefits than they did in the base game. But the main thing they gave was officially sanctioned new breeds. So you had your base breeds, your Ron Norns, they were called for the base game. And then by getting these life kits, you would get new, different breeds that have different characteristics, may gain different benefits from different plants, may evolve differently, may interact differently when they breed with other Norns and mutate. These were all officially sanctioned by CyberLife. These were put out by CyberLife officially themselves. And the other major expansion they had was called the Genetics Kit. And this one, for anybody that was a budding biology scientist as a kid, this was huge because it let you get in there, look at the genome for even the base Norns. So if you loaded up a base egg file, you could get the genes out of that. If you loaded up a creature that you specifically had raised and wanted to know why that mutation reacted that way, you could load it up. This is how they started understanding the Highlander, mutation better, some of the other mutations out there. They understood why it was happening, and you could see where the mutations were happening in it and go right down to the fine detail. You could modify their brain chemistry, modify their poses, their gaits, how they interact, how they process chemicals. It really kind of set it up as the focus of the digital DNA. This really helped show what was actually going on behind the scenes. And this also allowed for fan-made breeds that are still going on today, still being put out there, still popular nowadays. Now, both of these expansion packs, you couldn't buy them physically in store most of the time. I think there may have been one or two places that carried them down the road. But this was really mid to late 90s, online shopping. And I think the genetics kit itself was one of the few things, as a kid, I was able to convince my parents to buy, because I'm like, no, look how educational it is. It's teaching about genetics. It's an evolution of what Gregor Mendel talked about, and somehow managed to talk my folks into letting me use their credit card after giving them the cold hard cash to do that and promising if anything went wrong, I would be freaking out about it. As for the manual with this game, I would still highly recommend it. It doesn't have a lot of character, a lot of world building in the manual itself. Most of that was done on the website back in the day, which unfortunately has gone defunct. That being said, most of that information is still available online. I'll link to the wiki for the game itself, because that's going to have a lot of it there. I think I'm also going to link to a few of the communities that are out there as well, because they have a lot of resources for anybody interested in even trying this game out. I would still recommend having the manual for obvious reasons. It will give you detailed lists of how to play the game, how to interact with them, how to teach your creatures. And also, it does give a detailed breakdown of what's in all the plants, what's in all the food, what's in all the weeds, so that as you get deeper into the game, you're going to know exactly what to give them at certain times based on those chemical compositions. Now, in terms of games that this has influenced, in terms of the effect this has had on gaming as a whole, if not a direct impact, this game does show influences on certain themes, or it shares themes with games that came later. Now, in terms of direct impact, obviously Creatures 2 and Creatures 3 and Docking Station, which is a free version of Creatures 3 in a minimal setting, what those two games did is they definitely added deeper details into the digital DNA. There were some conversion kits you could get to actually bring creatures from Creatures 1 to Creatures 2 and then Creatures 2 to 3. But it wasn't easy because those had much deeper DNAs built into them. They took this concept and they made it bigger. The other thing they did is as the games went on, especially in Creatures 3, all those tools, all those applets that came in pop-out windows were integrated into the game itself. It was no longer pop-up windows. Sometimes you had to activate the tools to be able to use them. Other times, you just had to get to a certain space to use them. It was a different way of doing it. Personally, I prefer the ability to kind of pull up this information everywhere. You feel more like a field scientist studying these creatures as opposed to some omnipotent god guiding them into the world. In terms of broader influences, in terms of similar themes they have, Maxis is going to be the best one I go to. Again, they do the no-win scenarios. They do the broader simulations. One of them would be The Sims, because of its connection with showing that kind of a day in the life, a slice of life type of game, could have interesting aspects and could be a challenging game to play, regardless of the fact that it's not extremely goal-oriented outside what the player sets as a goal. It's not fighting anything. It's just seeing how you can control somebody's daily life, how you can guide somebody on their daily life. The other one, and this is, again, a Maxis game, has to be Spore. There is both the artistic design to a certain extent, and also both of these games let the system work out the details of movement, let the system work out the details of the look and all that based on just the basic rules that they lay down in the engine. So instead of having to design every little fine possible detail, they let the machine take over for you and let the computer do the work, because that's something it's better at than you are. Now, I would absolutely recommend this game. It still runs on modern systems. I know because I was using the GOG version of this game, so it had all the patches, it had some of the updated genomes in it. But I think it's a great game, and actually when you buy it, you're going to get both games, not just the one. So if you buy this game as well, you're going to get both Creatures 1 and Creatures 2. It's Canadian 8809 right now on GOG.com. Again, I'm going to link to it in the description. I think it's worth picking up. US, that should be the $5.99 price point if I remember right. But yeah, I would absolutely get this game. I think it's just such a great look at what the virtual pet craze became. It's a great look at an educational game that kind of masks itself as a simulation game in that sense. It's a really great opportunity to just dive in, have a virtual pet. The game saves when you close it, so you don't have to worry about coming back at a certain time. It doesn't run in the background unless you leave it open. And so that's it for creatures. I want to thank everybody for joining us this month. If you want to reach out to us, you can do so either on Twitter, at Roadmap Podcast, or come by the website, roadmappodcast.com. Feel free to suggest some old games that we should play at some point. Maybe share some of your favorite memories of this game or any other old game. I'm always happy to hear what you guys think, what you loved, what you didn't love growing up. Even ask some questions. I'm always up for answering questions. Don't forget to subscribe either on iTunes or Android. I'm going to have links in the description as well. Leave a review. You know, it's the only way I'm going to get better is if I get some feedback, if I get some review to listen to as well. Next month, we're going to be opening up the Summer of Star Trek. So over July and August, we're going to be looking at Star Trek games from a few different genres, looking at some of the history of it. It's such a broad topic that I'm really looking forward to diving into it every summer. At the end of July this year, we're going to be looking at Bridge Commander, a game that, you know, the newly released Bridge Crew, the virtual reality game, it owes a lot of its origins to this. But to start off the summer, the next episode coming up, we're going to be looking at the early years of Star Trek games. Those of you that have been playing Star Trek games for years, those of you that have looked into this, you know exactly where this topic's going to be starting off to. So join us again next time, and thanks again for listening.